Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 215.
Science Faction Order.
Are those like the things the judge says that says I can't see my ex anymore?
Yes, they're very similar to the orders that Damien has been issued, not only here, but in multiple countries and multiple jurisdictions. Stalking, flashing.
I'm the only Interpol restraining order file that they have.
You're literally the only person who has gotten a restraining order to stay away from baked goods because of sexual acts.
Guinness won't put me in the fucking book, though.
Particularly since your order of protection calls you a primate, specifically.
Allison, to go ahead jumping ahead, but we are doing the taxonomic ranks. Of course, that's our new intro bit, and we've gotten to order. So we already talked about the domain that we are in, which is eukaryotes. We talked about the kingdom that we're in, which is the animal kingdom. We talked about the phylum that we're in, which is essentially vertebrates or chordates. We talked about the class we're in, we're mammals, and then now we've gotten down to order. We happen to be in the order of primates, which includes us, monkeys, apes, greater and lesser apes, both of them.
I'm picturing a very prestigious round table with representatives of the order of the primate. Yes. Can they resume? Yeah, bananas, yeah. Yay or nay.
Yeah, I'd be really sad if we didn't get the head of that table too. Like, I'm tired of listening to this goddamn chimp.
We're the Angela Merkel Germany of this fucking council.
Also includes like lemurs, but there are other orders. Now, I remember this from college. In college, we had to memorize the orders of living mammals, and I thought it was useless at first because it's a lot of information, especially if you then have to then take that information and put every mammal that you get into one of those orders of living mammals. It's very difficult to do, but I later realized the genius of this exercise, which is it helps you understand these classifications of these groupings of animals. And in a way, it helps you understand evolution, because if you go back far enough, you're essentially talking about trees of evolution. That's a little bit more along the lines of cladistics, which we'll explain at the end of this, but it's very similar. And so as we go down, these are essentially groups that have slowly separated and diverged from one another. And it's interesting to see the weird numbers that stack up. Like one of them is out of the 5,000 plus mammal species on Earth, 50% of them belong to the order of rodentia, or rodents, meaning rats, mice, capybaras, all of those type of things.
So a ratatouille was inevitable. Statistically, there would be a rat that could control a human.
And there's actually a paper about that. 50%, think about that. All of the mammals you've ever seen, 50% of the species are actually in rodentia. 25% are actually in the order that includes all of bats. So 75% of all mammals species on the face of this earth are either rodents or bats, which is kind of an interesting little thing that you learn as you're going through all this.
It would be a much better world if 75% of all the mammals on earth were puppies.
Yeah, well, I mean, you couldn't have 75 different puppies speak. Never mind. You know what? You're fine.
We have to change the newspaper all the time.
There's also carnivora, which includes cats, bears, weasels, pinnipeds.
Kitties.
There's cetaceans, which includes dolphins and whales. Basically, these large groups kind of show some of the evolutionary history. It's a bigger grouping of everything. So now, if you think of us within primates, we are now in a group that includes all the things you would kind of think look kind of human-like. You know, they're ex-quadrupeds that to some extent can stand up. They give arms and grasping hands and that kind of stuff. So we are in a group that you would recognize as having some human-like characteristics as we keep going down the order. Because remember, we are going to keep going down from order down to the next ones. Because if you don't remember, we made a mnemonic, so you could remember the taxonomic ranks. Damien Kills Podcast Comedy on Otherwise Fucking Great Science Faction. We're on Otherwise right now for order. We've got a long ways to go till we get all the way to our species.
That's the one we should go with. In fact, we shouldn't even mention the second one because we have this one.
The Damien Knows Plenty of Cocks Offer Fucking Great Sex. That was the one we shouldn't mention.
And you mentioned it anyway.
No, I didn't mention it. I specifically said I wouldn't mention it. You would not like me mentioning it.
We'll see. All right, we'll see what happens next week.
Yeah, okay. We've gone down through domain, kingdom, phylum, class, and now order, and we're narrowing down to our own species. By the time we're done with this, you will basically be able to trace the human lineage all the way back to when we shared ancestors with bacteria.
You mentioned the term ex-quadruped a while ago, and I pictured a four-legged X-Men team.
Okay. Like,
Charles Xavier School.
It's just a bunch of cats and dogs.
Gifted and talented four-legged creatures.
I feel like that's like the Peruvian version of the X-Men. They just put a laser on the back of a couple stray dogs.
Don't let it hit your eye.
When did we diverge from, like, Donald Trump?
Given that we're white people, probably not too long ago, Allison. I think that all white people kind of share common ancestors pretty close. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But we are actually probably quite closely related. In fact, I bet you, you and I, based on the color of our skin.
Well, he is a lesser ape.
That is true. Well, he did. No, you're
so
thinking
he's
about
in our order.
You're thinking about the mom mating with the orangutan. That's a different thing.
We've covered the orangutan prostitute. We have. Yeah. It's a possibility.
But it is funny because, you know, if you given our where we come from, where our ancestry comes from, the likelihood is that you and I probably have a common ancestor within the last 400 years. And the likelihood is that you probably have a common ancestor with most people of that region within the past 1,000 years, almost certainly. So
we're all incest survivors.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, Damien, didn't you ever read the scientific paper about Adam and Eve? I mean, every one of us started banging our sisters.
Well, if I'm a survivor of that, is there a scholarship for that? Yeah. For incest survivors that I could hop on?
I feel like the award ceremony for that particular scholarship would not be as happy as one might think.
A lot of lead paint.
And speaking of lead paint, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. And with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. Still giggling to myself about that ape order of the ape. So that's going to be distracting me all episode. Keep that in mind.
That is usually something that's distracting you all episode. And somebody who can't be distracted is our scientist for the evening, Dr. Allison Gill. Doctor, how you doing?
I'm good. Now, are you a comedian archaeologist or
yes.
a comedian and an archaeologist?
I'm both. I'm a comedian archaeologist, comedian / archaeologist. Archaeology comedian.
So you're not just the funniest guy in the archaeology
office. So out in the field, you're funny,
right.
And then on stage, you tell jokes about apes.
No. In the field, I'm funny, and then I get on stage and deliver papers.
white papers.
This is about the LIDAR work I've been doing.
White papers. Yeah. It's to share a common ancestry
right.
within the last 1,000 years of other papers.
That's right. And you can catch more of Allison on her skyrocketing podcast, Mueller She Wrote, which is blowing up right now. Allison, you guys are doing really well. And I'm going to say, you've had a little bit of an advantage because somebody's been serving you up some fucking home runs.
Yeah. I can't take all the credit. Gotta give some to Bob Mueller.
Yeah, you have somebody's put a T-ball thing there with like a wiffle ball there and giving you that big red bat.
Oddly, we're like one of the only podcasts covering the subject, and it's going to be going on for at least another year. So I'm you know, we got on the ground floor, I guess.
Do you worry about a point where perhaps the podcast becomes really financially successful? But then all of a sudden, Trump straightens up and just flies right. No more scandal.
Yeah, all of a sudden, he decides to start going against the gun lobby. Then what are you going
to do? And I guess we'll have to focus on the other 99 people that are going to be indicted in the Russia probe.
But it's very interesting. Go ahead and take a listen, and please follow her on Podbean, and you get a chance to win a PlayStation 4. It's incredibly interesting, especially if, like me, you spend your time reading science and being a science geek, and they will explain things to you in a way that makes sense even to those political lay people like myself. So go ahead and check that out, and check out our website at www.thesciencefaction.com for all the articles we cover here, as well as some we don't get to. But for now, we got some great articles. Let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, guys, we got some interconnected articles this week because there's some really, really interesting stuff that came out in the field of genetics in the past about 2 weeks. And it all kind of blends together in a way that rewrites some of the history that we knew or thought we knew of both human beings and the spread of other animals throughout, especially the old world. So very interesting two studies came out this past week and a half that detail ancient human DNA. And we actually doubled with these two studies the amount of ancient DNA ever investigated. Now, it's not a huge number because before it was 10 people. So
yeah, I was about to say, what's the number?
Yeah. But
it's
doubled, and that gives us a gigantic amount of more information. Not only that, but if you think of 10 skeletons across the entire old world, what can you really tell? When you double that, you start getting a better population concentration, and these go over a wide time span, so we can kind of see things happening over time.
Particularly when you interview them, you definitely want a larger, you know, population sample.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Can we pull the ancient skeletons out and demand answers?
Yeah.
Old world sounds like a way less intimidating West world. Just, turn on me, robot. I fucking dare you.
There's a lot more walkers in old world. old world where people pay $40,000 a year to go help an octogenarian defecate.
How come nobody comes here for their sexual fantasies?
Well, there's that one guy, but nobody really likes him.
Japan, really, is the old world.
So it seriously shakes up some of the preconceived notions we have in human history. So really, really interesting. We had something called the Bell Beaker phenomenon, which is well known to anybody who studied archaeology.
I just love the name.
In Europe. In Europe.
Was Professor Honeydew part of the study?
It was a hybrid paper between Alexander Graham Bell and Professor Beaker.
It describes like this ceramic style that was around. We know it was around in the Iberian Peninsula and then Central Europe. And then we're talking about 5,000 years ago around that time. And when they analyzed the DNA of people in both of these areas during that time, so imagine Bell Beaker culture started in Iberian Peninsula, and then it moved to Central Europe, to like Germany, that kind of area. So we looked at the ceramics, and we see, oh, these ceramics basically moved. Then during this study, we tested the DNA to say, hey, did these people come and take over? And the answer is no. There seems to be almost no genetic interchange. It was a cultural interchange. They showed them how to make this different type of pottery. It caught on in a different place. However, a little bit later, the Bell Beaker culture started taking off in Britain. When we look at their skeletons, it tells a crazy story, because it turns out, in that sense, it was almost a complete replacement, meaning the people in Britain at that time, who we now know were dark-skinned people, they had very, very dark skin, they were almost completely replaced by this influx of Iberian people about 5,000 years ago who came with this Bell Beaker culture. They came in there, they replaced 90%. Of the island's original inhabitants, meaning those people who built Stonehenge, those people who were those ancient druids and stuff, they essentially all died out, with the exception of about 10% that intermingled into a population of Iberians that came over and took over Britain.
So we're not the first Americans to totally obliterate and replace a darker-skinned culture.
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, they did it to the British. Like, that was the British.
When you say the Iberian Peninsula, was Spanish invented at that point? Because then Spanish-speaking
this is
nation
long
invading.
Before, and we're actually going to get to the story of Spanish.
Well,
in
if
the
it
story.
Was the British, then that's us. I mean, you know.
Well, so the whole history of England is crazy, because then after that happens, then, you know, you have... in 70 AD, the Romans take over the British Isles. They have a huge genetic replacement with essentially southern Mediterranean DNA that completely takes over England. Then after they leave, the Roman Empire falls in 460. They take out of Britain. And then these Hessian or German mercenaries that had been hanging out there went back home and they went, hey, you know where there's good farmland and no Romans guarding anymore? And there's this huge Anglo-Saxon invasion from Germany that completely changes up the DNA there, and they completely dominate it. And then, starting 800 AD, the Vikings discover cross-ocean travel. They come, and they start raiding, and they almost completely replace the DNA again with Scandinavian DNA. And then, a little bit later on, Vikings that had settled in France and interbred with the French people came in, and after the Battle of Hastings, essentially took over England from there, adding in French DNA and other Viking DNA. England is just a hodgepodge of a place that has been taken over essentially more than any place else.
England got its revenge with the invasion of the Beatles.
Yeah, that's true. They were planning that for about 5,000 years as the Bell Beaker Iberians were wiping out 90%, literally decimating their population. They were just sitting there rubbing their hands like, wait till you see what we got from Liverpool.
A hero named Ringo Starr will rise.
Well, the Bell Beakers had their own Beatles. The Bell Beaker Beatles.
Very interesting stuff happens on top of that. As we start looking at the genetics of Central Asia, now this is a separate study, and this looked at people from the Central Asian steppe. These are the people who essentially originally domesticated horses. Because they domesticated horses, this small group that had just been hunter-gatherers, you know, think of them running around a little bit west of where Siberia is today. They domesticate horses first, and this gives them such a dramatic advantage that they dominate the entire steppe. Then they spread into Europe. Now, we always knew that happened. We knew they dominated the steppe down into India and up into Eastern Europe. And we knew that because all of us speak the same languages, the Indo-European languages. It all came from this tiny spot that happened to domesticate horses. They spread everything. That became Russian. Every single European language except for Finnish and Magyar, it became the languages of India, of Northern India. It became the languages in between. The most dominant language group in the entire world came from this tiny little group who figured out horses. What these genetics tell us, though, is something even more interesting, which is where we thought that they came up to kind of Eastern Europe, like the Huns and the Mongols later would. This group actually went all the way to the Atlantic. They completely took over Europe. They spread their genes through there. So now those Iberians who were like, aha, get our Bell Beakers, we're the badasses, all of a sudden they're getting their asses taken over, too.
I have to rethink my risk strategy now.
Right. Come out of the Asian steppe and then go into the Atlantic.
Well, picking Asia is a risky move in the game of risk.
No, it's more Papua New Guinea for me. Yeah, right. But if you have these guys, you know, maybe Asia's not so bad.
Very interesting. And it shows some interesting stuff that later colonization by farmers a little bit later on that come through Europe, they also do the same thing, completely spread and essentially dominate, spread their genes. They mix a little bit more instead of killing everybody. They mix a little bit more and spread, except for very northern Europe, which kept its hunter-gatherers. So the Scandinavian areas kept their hunter-gatherers because the climate was too cold for the agriculture at the time. So people would come, the agriculturists would come in, and there's literally like a line in which you can see the cultures interacting. You would have hunter-gatherers north of this line. You'd have these invasion of farmers south of it.
According to my dad, that line is 68 degrees. And don't you dare go. Yeah.
Don't touch that thermostat. Yeah. And what's funny is these hunter-gatherers would bring in women from the farmer groups. They wouldn't bring in men, and there wouldn't be a replacement the other way. It was only a one-way replacement of women into the hunter-gatherer groups from the farmers. So, like, you just see these women who are like, I'm tired of these super modern crop towns. I want to go live off in the wilderness with those hunter-gatherers.
Well, look at it from their perspective as well. You've mentioned that the farmers of this time were malnourished, right? But they're those sexy 6-foot-tall hunter-gatherers with their six-packs and everything.
That's true. When farming first came in, you were monocrop agriculture. You had huge detriments to health. Instead, you got that kind of food security.
Yeah, early teen rebels. I don't want to go out with a Republican. Yeah. I want to get on the back of a motorcycle and hang out with the hunter.
When in reality, it was actually probably a lot of kidnapping women or trading them or whatever.
Oh, no, I'm sure it was all up to the women.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's way more whimsical to think like a parent, like, go ahead and marry your betrothed to marry Rick Moranis. Now, don't you be hanging out with that Chris Hemsworth in the forest again.
Yeah, it's less of a Bruce Springsteen song and more of like a horrible, horrible movie. But very, very interesting watching this genetic trace go from the steppes of Central Asia all the way through Western Europe. It actually answers a very, very interesting question, this riddle. We talked about this when they first published this back in 2015. We talked about this on Science Faction. Genetic tests of Native Americans seem to show that they're a mixture of East Asian people
and maize.
No, goddammit, Damien! At least you used it up. You can only do the maize once an episode.
I popped my flare. I'm good.
Yeah, okay. They're a mixture of East Asian people and Europeans. And that never made sense. We thought, wait, was there some weird group of Europeans that crossed all of Asia and then made it, and then they created the Beringians who hung out in Beringia, the now submerged continent?
Basically.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, but it didn't make any sense. How did this European DNA get in there? Now it makes sense, because it wasn't European DNA. That European DNA is actually Siberian DNA. Mm-hmm. It's from this conquest of the steppe. What we always figured was, this is straight European DNA. This is what the Europeans look like. No. This is the invasion 5,500 years ago of these horse-wielding people from Central Asia. They changed the DNA of Europe. They also happened to contribute to the DNA of people that later became Native Americans. It's not that there's European DNA in Native Americans. It's that European DNA was replaced by Central Asian DNA, which also contributed to Native Americans.
All this evidence was here the whole time, so is what took them so long to discover it was that you can only analyze Siberian DNA below 32 degrees Fahrenheit?
No, that is not it. It was actually... So they did have some advances that helped. One is we got more skeletons.
Well, we're just going to find... Migration, Bering Strait migration? Yes. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. Okay, all right.
So one is that we are always going to find more skeletons. The more we find, obviously, the more information we have. So we've just literally found more skeletons. Another one is the dramatic cost reduction and speed increase of gene sequencing made possible by new machines. Another one is the discovery that the Patronus bone, which is a tiny bone in the inner ear, actually has a shitload of DNA. We never knew this before. It has way more DNA, like 100 times more DNA than the average bone in a human body.
It's also a Harry Potter spell.
Yeah. Hi-ya! Patronus!
That is what they say.
Why do you make a karate noise?
Yeah, is that what Harry Potter does?
Cast a spell.
It is also a school for martial arts. Yeah, they don't delve into that in the books.
Didn't he sweep Voldemort's leg? Isn't that how that works?
If you read the books and don't watch the movie, you do get to see that.
Yeah, I don't actually read Harry Potter, but I think I got it right. This bone, now we found out, oh shit, we can find DNA in skeletons we thought the DNA had been completely depleted from and have a lot more of it. So that is also really helpful. Also, a new method of implementing and reading genetic codes based on different variables that allow us to analyze things much more quickly by hitting the parts that are important as opposed to a lot of the junk DNA. We've basically just kind of, we're getting better at DNA. That's the whole thing. And we're finding more skeletons. This is going to keep opening up. This isn't the end of it. This is super exciting news. Figuring out that Europeans aren't really Europeans, except for maybe a few Scandinavians. Maybe even then they're inbred in there. But finding out Europeans aren't really Europeans, that England was essentially all the people who built Stonehenge were completely wiped out. I mean, they got decimated worse than Native American groups that later on when the New World was colonized.
You're going to be quoted by far-right groups for saying that.
England had it the worst!
Irish slaves.
Yeah.
White lives matter. Hashtag Druid lives matter.
All of these discoveries are super interesting because to me, whenever you can find this kind of science that tells us history, it's really interesting. It tells us the story of how we got to where we are. And later on, it could bring up a lot of interesting stuff, like why we have certain genetic diseases, why certain populations have genetic relatedness to others, like the whole European Native American thing, which was a mystery for so long, i.e. the 3 years we've known about it, but was a super mystery until we figured this out because we were able to look into the genes. And they can tell a story that is so much more accurate and so much more real and so much less biased than the histories we have written, even than the archaeology, because the archaeology is interpretive and this DNA is pretty static and pretty binary.
Could this be used to support any white person who wants to say, I'm part Native American, I'm part Cherokee,
It's more like they're part you. That's the other way
around.
It's
even better.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so now so what was this group called with the horses?
Well, they probably were in the Caspian steppe
Rolling
area.
Stones?
We called them Proto-Indo-Europeans because they had this Proto-Indo-European language that they spread off and became all the Romance languages, all the Indian languages, Iranian, like all that stuff. So
they tamed the horses and brought them over here.
Yes.
With Romance languages.
Wow.
Not over here as into America, but over into the
Siberia.
Rest. Yeah. The horse went extinct, even though it evolved in the New World. It went extinct around 10 to 11,000 years ago and it got overhunted by Native Americans. So there were no Native Americans riding around on horses here, but the precursors to Native Americans over the Caspian Sea are the ones who domesticated them in the first place. This is going to keep going, and we're going to find more and more interesting stuff. If you're a young geneticist, this is a great field to go into, because this is really going to highlight the history of our species as we keep going. Pretty soon, we're going to narrow it down. This is when this diaspora happened out of Africa down to 1,000 years. This is what happened. This is when the Middle East was occupied. This is when this entire group that was humans made it out, but then went extinct and got replaced by this other group. There's so much in this, and all this evidence is in our blood. It's in our DNA. You don't have to dig it up out of the ground. You don't have to look through old volumes of books, and it's more accurate. It's amazing, and it will revolutionize both history, archaeology, and everything else. Super interesting. Look in the future to see these same type of studies tell us how the Polynesian islands were occupied in a little bit more detail, how the New World was occupied in a little bit more detail. One of the really exciting fields here is the replacement of some of the original migrants out of Africa in Southeast Asia. It used to be Southeast Asia. Everybody looked like Australian Aborigines. And that was that way for a long time, for tens of thousands of years, until groups that were related to the Han Chinese came in and completely dominated them and took them out.
It's because the Aborigines refused to regulate boomerangs, and so their society just became...
It was likely boomerang...
Child,
yeah.
School boomerangs.
It was almost certainly boomerang-related.
When Crocodile Dundee came to New York...
That's right.
That's when they became imperiled.
Yeah.
When left by themselves. So then, you know, it was you know, curtains.
Where is our white savior?
He's on a horse.
That's not a DNA test. This is a DNA test.
That's a knife, sir. I can't.
All right. And that leads us right into article number 2. Sadly, guys, we just got some sad news this week. There are no more wild horses left on Earth.
Did you not get enough horse talk in the previous article? Or good fucking news.
Yeah. Well, this is another genetic study of ancient DNA, but this happens to be ancient DNA of horses. This is really interesting. Now, you might say, what happened? Did we kill the last wild horse? No. We killed the idea. You did?
You didn't. Don't take credit for my work.
Look, donkey shows don't count. Okay?
Yeah, I got that horse back for Catherine the Great.
Let them eat cock.
What actually happened is we found out that what we thought was the last group of wild horses weren't actually wild horses. So I'm going to pronounce this as best I can. The Przewalski's horse, which has a Z in there, which I'm just ignoring because it makes no sense if you try and pronounce it with it. But the Przewalski's horse, which is in that Central Asian area, kind of the Kazakhstan area, we thought for a long time this was the last remnant of the wild horse. It's very divergent. It looks very different. We've been observing it for a long time. What the genetic study showed, and by finding old horse skeletons, ancient DNA out of these horse skeletons, is these aren't actually wild horses. They are feral horses. But they are the remnants of probably what was the first horses ever domesticated in that Central Asian steppe. So some people domesticated some horses. They used those to conquer the world. At some point, some of those horses got loose and went feral, and they are now what we think of as the Przewalski horse, which we thought was actually a true wild horse. It's not. It's feral. It had once been domesticated.
I wonder how many Polish horses it takes to to domesticate a people.
It takes 3, one to hold the light bulb and the others to spin the house.
How many Polish horses does it take to procreate?
But there were some other surprises in this. So not only did we unfortunately find out there are no more wild horses left on Earth because those horses weren't wild, they were feral. We also found that the horses that are currently around on the world, every breed, you go from Clydesdale to Painted Horse to Pinto Horse, doesn't matter what they are.
Mini horse.
Mini tiny
horse. Wild mini horse is extinct.
Shetland pony. They're not the descendants of the first horses ever domesticated, which means that horses got domesticated at least twice. That's really interesting because that means that somebody else was domesticating horses in probably Europe. We think it probably came from a wild
Hack.
Variant. Yeah. There's a Carlos Mencia of horse domestication.
Yeah. God.
So the civilization that domesticated the first horse, right. They died off.
No, they spread really far.
And they just said, no, we got this new horse, horse 2.0.
Right. So what happened is at some point then, maybe before, maybe after, a different horse was domesticated from the European wild stock, which is now extinct, by the way. Now we only have the domesticated variety. And those spread throughout the world. Maybe it's because they're better in some way. Maybe they breed faster. Maybe they eat food that's easier to procure for them. You know, maybe they're more resistant to disease. Who knows? But that became the horse of choice for everybody in the world.
That makes a lot more sense. I pictured a horse uprising, in which case the horses freed themselves and doomed the society, doomed their former horseless masters.
But doesn't Asimov have like 5 rules of horses? That can do no harm. And
we are breaking rule number 2.
We do have other examples of feral animals. You know, you have the American Mustangs. They were essentially horses that got out and became feral.
America.
They're the only gun-toting horse.
Yeah.
They smoke Marlboro Red.
Way more obese than other horses do.
We have bulls that go feral sometimes, especially ones that get released in the outback in places like Australia. They go feral. They're actually super scary to run into. They'll fuck you up. We have cats that go feral all the time. That happens even, you know, in domesticated areas and cities. We have pythons in Florida that end up going feral out into the woods, though it's argued that they were domesticated in the first place.
Out here we have a group of feral parrots.
Yes, we do. In San Diego, that fly around. That's very true. And almost all around, we see feral pigs, especially in the South. You got to remember, pigs aren't native to this continent. Pigs are not native to the New World. All the pigs that we have essentially come from Russian hog stock. So when you see those things where somebody in South Georgia gets a 2,000-pound hogzilla that's been running around, it's not like that thing is, you know, native to this place and has been here for thousands of years. That's a domesticated animal that got domesticated in Asia, brought over here, then went feral. Then went crazy.
And then there's all the feral chickens in Hawaii.
Oh, they have feral chickens?
Yeah, well, basically when the typhoon hit, all the chickens were free. And then now they're just, wherever you go, you run around Kauai especially.
Yeah.
They're like chickens with tusks?
Yes. They've evolved.
We have feral pigs here in San Diego, and they're a real problem, because feral pigs...
I've never once seen a feral.
Really?
I mean, unless we're talking about some people I know.
No.
Yeah, a real problem. Like, somebody who's never been to San Diego is going, oh, you gotta watch out for San Diego, feral pigs.
No, well, first of all, you do, because they'll fuck you up. Anybody who thinks, oh, it's a pig, no big deal, a pig will fuck you up, because they have tusks. The feral pigs have tusks, and they go feral real quick. They'll go feral within a few weeks. A domesticated pig will go feral. And they grow big, razory hair. I've run into one...
Razory hair?
Yeah. I've run into one that was coming down from the mountains and it was very sick, and so it wasn't as much of a threat. But it had huge tusks, was scary as hell. And what happened was a native reservation nearby the Cleveland National Forest around here, a guy wanted to hunt pigs, so he raised a bunch of pigs and then let them loose into the forest. Pigs are next to humans and elephants as the most destructive animal you can introduce into a new ecosystem. They destroy everything. They uproot crops.
I wonder if intelligence has to do with that then, because
yeah, pigs
are
very
smart.
They're incredibly smart. They uproot crops. They eat nesting birds. On the ground.
Our truffle population is decimated.
Because they're so smart, they're incredibly hard to hunt. You have to hunt them at night. You have to be very experienced, very good.
They hunt you back.
We pay hunters now to go into the Cleveland National Forest and kill these things because they're demolishing the ecosystem.
A bunch of dicks.
Yeah. And they
are they rapists too, like dolphins and ducks?
I think we've rushed this topic before on Science Faction. I think all animals are kind of rapists, right? You don't see a lot of informed consent when it comes to animals. I'm going to do this now.
But some of them are so rapey. Yeah. Like ducks evolved a getaway vagina.
Or
know?
Dolphins. Pods of male dolphins will isolate one female and gang rape her. Like,
I say I'm pro tuna.
Yeah.
If I bought you a dolphin safe tuna sandwich, get this shit out of my face.
Hashtag me tuna.
So we have a huge feral pig problem here, and feral pigs are a problem almost everywhere they go. Those feral animals are especially dangerous because they're not usually native to the environment, so they don't have the right predators, and they take over. Very, very interesting stuff. Unfortunately, we don't have any more wild horses. It's a part of my heart that really hurts for that, because I do like the idea of the wild horses running around, but we can still remember the feral horses and camels and all those other animals that, to this day, still roam the wilds.
Do you feel like a feral horse, if they had a lobby, they'd really be upset that you're splitting hairs, like, Like, we don't require man. How are we not wild? Right. We've done everything we can to be wild. Tell us what we need to do to earn this title.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point, which is, what is the difference? And the difference is, somebody has crafted that genetic stock. We are no longer looking at what was there, that genetic stock that came through natural selection. We're looking at artificial selection, even if it's 5,500 years ago. And that artificial selection dramatically changes stocks. So we know that within two generations, artificial selection can greatly differentiate phenotypes, meaning things will get bigger or smaller or whatever, whereas in natural selection, that might take 40, 50 generations.
Question then, can these feral horses, if left to their own devices, ever be classified again as...
they'll always be
feral.
Yeah,
that was going to be my question. Can it devolve into, like, you know, like, I got my virginity back after not having sex for a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hymen grows back.
Was there, like, a ceremony or...
Yeah, just myself and a bottle of wine and some tears and a cat.
Some well-placed cellophane wrap.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let's move on to everybody's favorite game. I call BS.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
I call BS is the game where I read four science news articles, and my panelists compete to see which ones are real and which ones are BS, standing for bad science. Are you guys ready to play?
Yes.
I am ready to continue my prison sentence.
Damien has lost every game this year.
Factually untrue. Fake news.
99% of the games last year.
Fake news.
And I think before that you might have won one or two, so I don't want to classify it too much. By the way, we only do 52 shows a year, so if you lost 99, it meant you won half a game last year.
nerd.
I encourage our fans to go back and listen to our catalog of episodes and prove Bobby wrong.
Check out his shame. All right. Article number one. A new study shows that tobacco use is the biggest risk factor for dementia. Damien, is this science or bad science?
Bad science. There's no way it could be worse than, like, bath salts. Bath salts are the worst for dementia. Bad science.
We have a lot of long-term studies about bath salts and dementia.
The ancient Romans used to use it to cure sanity.
I think that was lead. All right, and Allison.
I don't know, it's tough. I feel like there's more dementia now and less smoking, but also the people who are demented now are really old and probably smoked. So,
both good points.
Dang. Yeah, bad science. Bad science.
All right, article number two. Iran has arrested a group of environmentalists under suspicion of using lizards as nuclear spies. Damien, is this science or bad science?
If you had said that they were Jewish lizard spies, more believable.
Yeah. Just like a monitor lizard with a yarmulke on it.
You can tell by the yarmulke.
They're like, the lizard's dead. He's not moving. He's like, it's okay. It's Saturday. It's the Sabbath. He doesn't do much.
I'm a lizard. I'm not a wasp.
I don't know that you didn't omit the Jewish part.
Okay.
So I'm going to say science.
All right. And Allison.
Yeah, even though I think it should be Pakistani lizards. No, the lizards are there. Wait, were the lizards brought in?
The lizards were brought in.
Science.
All right. Article number three. Scientists have recently discovered how the gate to the underworld killed so quickly. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. And Dave Chappelle changing his name to Gate to the Underworld was an iffy move at first, but man, its career, it's
that
like
dude
a second,
slays, dude.
Second golden age.
Yeah, you try and follow Dave Chappelle. All right, and Allison.
The Gate to the Underworld?
Yes. Like, God, you asked, Allison. The Gate to the Underworld is a 2nd century
you
BC
son of a bitch.
construction in Turkey. It's basically a cave with a man-made facade over it. There's some Greek writings about it, about how the priests would toss in animals that would die, and they would use this as part of their show of spiritual power, because you could say, look, I'm so powerful, I'll toss an animal into this cave, and it will die immediately.
Oh, and so we've discovered why it does that?
Yes.
I'll say science.
All right. And article number four, new research finds that women who clean their houses regularly have improved lung function over time. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science because something sexist.
So the women who clean their houses, right, the women have better lung function.
Right.
Now, I think it's probably worse because of the cleaning and the chemicals.
Okay. All right.
And just cleaning stuff.
Would it change your guys' opinion if I told you that this was from the journal of Ricky Ricardo? Lucy, you clean better.
That journal put out an article about conveyor chocolate that changed my life.
All right. Let's go back and see how you guys did. Follow along at home and see how you did. Article number one. A new study shows that tobacco use is the biggest risk factor for dementia. Both of you guys thought this one was bad science, and this one is bad science. It's actually booze. So alcohol use disorders...
Damn it!
They're the most preventable...
My two things!
Yeah, those are your favorites!
You sure it's not pot? You sure?
Sure it's not cleaning?
So alcohol use disorders are the most important preventable risk factors for the onset of all types of dementia, especially early onset dementia. The study looked specifically at the effects of alcohol use disorders and included people who had been diagnosed with mental and behavioral disorders or chronic diseases that were attributed to chronic harmful use of alcohol. So sometimes we think of alcohol use and we go, well, if you don't have liver cancer or something like that, you didn't get a DUI, you're fine.
You gotta beat my wife.
Yeah. Well, you gotta remember, it's like CTE in a way. Like, you can go play a few games of football and you'll be just fine and you'll never have a single issue. But eventually it adds up. There's an amount of consistently using that will add up. Now with alcohol, we see this with alcohol use disorders. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But here's the key to this. When we talk about alcohol use disorders, we're not talking about the person who's having a glass of wine at dinner.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that either. Yeah.
we're talking about the person who has a glass of wine at breakfast.
I'm talking about Dr. Gill.
Yeah, I forgot about your latest patent for the wine bottle beer bong.
Yeah, shotgun this bottle of wine.
It's people who get shit housed repeatedly, basically. When you get super drunk nonstop, you are doing damage to your brain, and that damage has some long-term consequences. What they're saying is, in this case, that seems to be overwhelmingly the majority of the cases of early onset dementia come from that. And it's not that surprising. For the same reason, it's not that surprising that football players get CTE. You do a little bit of damage, you're probably fine. But it accumulates, and eventually all that damage adds up to a condition in which your brain is impaired.
Now, is this overall, or is this per the population who uses it? Because I would think something like meth, amphetamines would cause more brain damage, but right, maybe not necessarily dementia.
So think about this in this way. You're not looking at the population of people who drink. You're looking at the population of the people who have dementia. And then
okay.
So then you're figuring back. So that's a good point, because there could also be a genetic susceptibility that's involved in that as well. It's not necessarily just the alcohol, but it's a huge case study. They looked at 57,000 cases of early onset dementia.
Yeah.
Yeah. And before the age of 65, you're right. And this is, like we always say in science fiction, causation, correlation. We're not proving a causation here, we're proving a correlation.
Like how the dwindling number of pirates is, you know, causing global warming.
Right, or my favorite, the one that I've always used, the one that I was taught in college, which is eating ice cream is associated with drowning. The more ice cream that is sold in any given place, the more drownings that occur. If you were a politician, you could look at these numbers, they follow each other exactly, and you would say, oh my God, this ice cream is killing kids, we need to get rid of this ice cream, it's causing drownings. And then somebody who understands causation, correlation would raise their hand and go, don't both those things happen in the summertime? The
good, so I can still get shit-faced every day then, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Also, eat some ice cream while you're at it and go swimming.
We'll do.
On those 57,000 cases of early onset dementia before the age of 65, a majority, 57%, were related to chronic heavy drinking. That's huge, because that means
that's a lot.
If you eliminated it, more than half of early onset dementia would go away.
Well, define heavy drink, because you said constantly bathing your brain in alcohol.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, on a scale of leaving Las Vegas
right,
versus, I stopped drinking to go to work.
Yeah.
It's not constant. It's...
Yeah, both of those are probably still bad. Basically, I think it's you getting drunk or severely intoxicated three or more nights a week. Yeah, so cut back if you don't want that early onset. Again, causation, correlation, think about that. But this is a strong correlation when you look at numbers that big. N numbers of 57,000, 57% of those being attributed to heavy drinking. It could be that people who are predisposed for dementia or do other activities that cause dementia also are predisposed to drink. That could be the case, but I don't know that I'd want to be taking that chance.
Yeah, you probably can't be a functional dementia patient like you can be a functional alcoholic.
Yeah.
Could it not have anything to do with alcohol, just CTE? Maybe drunk people fall and hit their head a lot.
This is 57,000 NFL players that gather someplace.
Yeah, me and Bernie Kosar hanging out and having some drinks.
I like how Damien keeps trying to explain it away. He's like, what's the way I can keep getting wasted?
I like how when I pick a quintessential quarterback, it's Bernie Kosar.
Yeah.
Joe Montana didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't think Tom Brady.
Article number two. Iran has arrested a group of environmentalists under suspicion of using lizards as nuclear spies. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science.
Yes! Greenpeace?
Basically, the Ayatollah recently justified the arrests of environmentalists by claiming that they were Western spy agencies using lizards to keep tabs on Iran's nuclear program. Here are the direct quotes. Several years ago, some individuals came to Iran to collect aid for Palestine. We were suspicious of the route they chose. In their possessions were a variety of reptile desert species like lizards, chameleons. We found out that their skin attracts atomic waves and that they were nuclear spies who wanted to find out where inside the Islamic Republic of Iran we have uranium mines and where we are engaged in atomic activities. So, Allison, you actually have some experience working with nuclear reactors. You ever use lizards to figure out what's going on in there?
Yeah, well, after our badges break down, we've got these backup lizards.
Yeah.
We just put them on our shoulder with a little leash, a little collar. But you could use a harness because they'll slip it because their head is as wide as their body. But, you know, you just have them there. And depending on, you know, kind of how many, what color they turn, if their tail falls off.
This is what happens when you don't have, so he's the Ayatollah, right? So he doesn't have anybody who kind of like hits him. He's like, dude, like, don't wear that shirt out. That shirt looks stupid. You look like an idiot. Don't wear that.
There's nobody. Look young. It's Tom Hardy.
The Ayatollah doesn't have that guy. Everybody's yes men. You know, like, yeah, whatever you do is right. This is what happens when you have too many yes men. You just say dumbass shit because you're not used to being contradicted. Mm-hmm. Obviously, lizards don't have any kind of special properties of absorbing nuclear radiation. They cannot be used that way. But this is all just a cover because for the past few years, Iran's been severely cracking down on prominent environmentalists, often under the guise of spies or espionage. And basically what they're doing is they want to get these people out of their country because they think they're trying to usurp the authority of the Ayatollah. They're trying to tell people where to build or what to do. And
it's really bad for humanitarian organizations who are going in with vaccinations or anything like that. That's terrible.
And not just that, but, you know, these people are doing good work. There are species that are in that area that will never be found anywhere else. And if you don't have somebody go save them now, they get lost to the world. You know, like wild horses, we'll never have them again. Only we have the opportunity to stop that now if it wasn't for this guy who doesn't have somebody to tell him he's wearing a stupid shirt. All right. On to article number 3, scientists have recently discovered how the gate to the underworld killed so quickly. Both of you guys thought this one was science. This one is science. Again, we already talked. It's a 2nd century BC construction in what is now Turkey. It was a natural cave with they kind of built a man-made facade. It was rediscovered.
Turkey's Alamo.
We knew it from ancient writings, ancient Greek texts. We knew about this, and we knew that the priests used it as part of their power rituals.
You got a mouse in your pocket?
Humans, yes.
It's a lizard.
That's what was in there. So we knew about this from ancient writings, but we didn't know where it was. It was rediscovered about 7 years ago by archaeologists, and they've been investigating. Yeah, and they basically discovered that it's volcanic gases, which, you know, one could kind of estimate based on the location and stuff, that are seeping through the ground to this place. And that what's really interesting about it is that the priests were smart enough to kind of track how this worked. Now, who knows how they did this? Probably threw birds in at different times, see how long it took them to die.
Unbelievers.
Yeah. But what they figured out is the way the gate was built and shaped, winds coming in and sunlight and stuff would disperse the gas differently at different times. So they could walk in at the right time and say, look, I'm so powerful, I can walk through the gates of death and not be harmed, then walk back out, and then later on toss a pigeon in there and that thing would die, or person.
We would do that when my dad would fart.
Yeah, there you go. And he walks in, I'm immune!
But if the wind and the sunlight disperse the gases, you know, we're
safe. So if you went in at night or any time where the winds were calm, you would almost instantly die, even if somebody the size of a person. If you could go in when winds were in the right way, pushing it out of the particular cave, you could go in there and then be unharmed. And this gave those priests great power, because essentially it'd be the equivalent, the modern day equivalent of having somebody go, look at this amazing gun, watch, and he shoots a bunch of deer and elk and everything, and then he has somebody shoot him and it doesn't hurt him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have any reverence for David Copperfield.
Yeah, I guess it would be like a real David Copperfield.
You say kill once you enter. It's once you take a breath and enter, or are you just scalded by these gases?
You'd have to breathe.
Okay, so there is the priest who could say, look, I'm all powerful, and just and hold his breath.
Yeah, I think you'd probably have to stay in there for a while, give a little bit of a speech about how powerful you are.
I'll answer some questions.
Yeah.
Right now. Go for it. Hurry.
And lastly, article number 4. New research finds that women who clean their houses regularly have improved lung function over time. Both of you guys thought this one was bad science, and this one is bad science, meaning Allison wins with a dominant perfect score. Booyah, Damien. Booyah.
It was another tie. You know what?
You can't tie when she won, Damien. I don't understand how you can call that
a tie.
I've
done all I can do.
Yeah.
I've read The Secret and I understand. I just need to accept the things I can't change plot to kill Bobby.
You must be doing The Secret wrong. Are you envisioning failure? Is that what's going on? Because it seems like every time.
That's how I seek it out.
That is actually The Secret.
Damien's negging himself.
Like me and the Washington Generals are reading the same book.
As Allison pointed out, this is the opposite, and it's especially true for women who clean for a living. It hints at the idea that there's a chemical impact to the lungs from these cleansers. Cleansers are usually safe when used in the right amount, when used with good ventilation. If you read the back, it'll tell you, you know, have a window open, do all this stuff. And especially, here's the big one, don't mix them. I have had this problem numerous times. I had this problem with roommates in college. It's a big deal, especially if you mix ammonia and bleach. So you throw some Windex or some 409, where you put bleach in there, you've just made chlorine gas.
Yeah, so, even vinegar and ammonia. is bad.
Right, and so usually what you would say is use these in well-ventilated areas, don't overuse them, and most importantly, do not mix them.
Or just don't clean.
No, we need to. You still need to clean, because then you'll get bacterial infections later on.
Well, no, someone else can clean.
They looked at over 6,000 participants in the European Community Respiratory Health Survey.
That's a good size.
Yeah. The participants whose average age was 34 when they enrolled were followed for more than 20 years. So this is a longitudinal study, which is really good because it means you're looking at the same population. You're not looking at what differences could happen over time where people got different chemicals.
Fewer variables.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's very, very good, solid study. The study found that compared to women not engaged in cleaning, women who were engaged in cleaning had lower breathing volumes. They could do less with their lungs. They could push out less. So if you ever taken one of those lung tests where you blow through the tube and see how high you can make a little ball go.
And then the police officer puts the handcuffs on you. Is that the one?
And then you have one in your car from then on. they basically didn't have the lung capacity or functioning. Again, this isn't necessarily causational. It could be correlational.
No, it's definitely a cause, and I need you to send me the article because I need to tell everyone immediately. Right.
Stop cleaning! Because it may be that people who take jobs as cleaners also happen to inherently be of a lower socioeconomic status that also happens to have them lower lung function. But let's be real. You're inhaling a bunch of chemicals. The fact of the matter is you're probably doing damage to some of the membranes that are inside of your entire pulmonary system. Think about that when you're cleaning. Remember, if you remember nothing else, keep a window open, don't overuse it, and the most important one, don't mix the chemicals.
And stop cleaning.
I have a serious question to my standards.
Okay.
I've always wondered if you used chlorine to clean your toilet bowl, and perhaps you had a strong pee that day, would the ammonia in that pee create chlorine gas?
You mean if you use bleach? Yes.
Oh, sorry, if you use bleach to clean the toilet.
Yes,
and then
so this is actually this is a common thing that people talk about because you do have little like bleach cleaners for toilet bowls and stuff because they work so well on porcelain. Usually the bleach that you buy that is meant to go in a toilet bowl, whether it's the one with the weird spray nozzle or that little thing you drop in the tank, is actually chemically designed to not react with ammonia for that exact reason. But it used to be when people would clean the toilet with pure bleach, if you just filled the toilet up with bleach and then just peed in it, depending on the ammonia content of your pee on any given day, you would be creating chlorine gas.
Yeah, we kind of had this happen in our when we tried to use bleach, straight bleach, to clean the cat boxes.
Oh, really?
Because cat urine generates a lot more ammonia than human urine, unless you're at a guy's bathroom at a bar, which is, I don't know what happens there. But yeah, we were like, oh, we got to get the fuck out of here.
And it's really dangerous. I mean, that's what the fucking Nazis were using. It's super dangerous.
So I don't clean.
Thank you, Allison, for not giving me idea of how to handle my girlfriend's cat.
Yeah.
You do a lot worse things to your girlfriend's cat, which led to those aforementioned restraining orders. All right. Thank you, Allison, for coming back for Science Faction 215. And thank you, audience, for coming back, where you learned about the orders of living mammals, how ancient human DNA has rewritten history, why there's no more wild horses, why alcohol is the biggest risk factor for dementia, why Iran accused environmentalists of using lizards as nuclear spies, how the gate to the underworld killed, and why women who use cleaning products have worse lung function than those who don't. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 216.
That is right. The Ayatollah says two things. No more Jewish lizards. Also, come on, the shirt is sweet. It says Top Belt. It's like MMA.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.